Welcome to the Fatigue Super Conference. And I think this is going to be a really important recovery story. I'm talking with Samantha Quemby, who is one of the psychology practitioners at the Optum Health Clinic. And we're going to be obviously talking about Sam's recovery journey and the different things that have helped and supported that. But as we've been doing for this series of recovery stories for the conference, we're taking specific themes or specific kind of core principles within the Optum Health Clinic approach and using these stories to kind of highlight how those themes have been important. And for this interview, we're going to talk about some of the different jigsaw pieces that were important for Sam's recovery journey. And people that don't know about Optum Health Clinic, one of the key ways that we see fatigue, meaning chronic fatigue, ME, fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, adrenal fatigue, the whole kind of collection of conditions, is that there is rarely, if ever, one specific piece which needs to be addressed for someone then to make a full recovery. It is like a jigsaw, and the kind of recognition and definition of those different pieces is really important. Putting those pieces together in the right sequence and the right way is really important. And sometimes you can have the right things at the right time, and they can be either not helpful or even detrimental. We're so passionate about this idea of jigsaw pieces that actually the Optum Health Clinic logo, which is also the logo for this conference, is jigsaw pieces coming together. That's how central this idea is to the way that we look at things. So welcome, Sam. Thank you so much for being willing to share your story.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
So let's just start with when you first started to get symptoms back in, I think when you were first diagnosed back in 2007. So just say a little bit about what the kind of the circumstances were and what your life was like at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been living in London for about 4 or 5 months and I was working for a PR agency. So it was very full on, very stressful, long hours, like no one left on time, like you didn't want to be the first one to kind of get up and leave. It was that sort of environment. I wasn't getting paid very much. And obviously London is not a place you want to be living on a small wage. So I kind of had a lot of financial stress. I didn't really love what I was doing. So I wasn't very happy. And there was a lot of stress because the job wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. And I felt a bit lost about kind of career paths and future. And also there's probably some emotional stresses from kind of a previous sort of relationship that was still sort of lingering. So there was quite a lot going on. And I remember just, I think it was kind of around November time and just not being too well. And obviously flu is often around in the winter. And I thought, okay, I've just got the flu. I felt really awful. After a week, still no better. After 2 weeks, still the same, like couldn't get out of bed, really weak, just not good, but nothing shifting. And it got to kind of the third, nearly fourth week. And, you know, myself and my parents were like, this isn't flu, like this isn't normal. And I somehow managed to get myself back home because I wasn't registered with the GP in London. So I went back home to my kind of regular GPs, my parents lived, and then I was kind of diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome or ME. And I remember at the time feeling a sense of relief because although this was the first time my body had kind of, I guess, completely crashed to the point of just being bedridden, for quite a few years previously, I had not always felt particularly well. I didn't feel like I was functioning at a kind of optimum level. And really that started from sort of teenage years at school. So I used to get very tired, often had to kind of sleep after school, often felt run down, like my glands would feel funny, I'd feel achy, but then nothing would materialize. And at the time, nothing was extreme enough to really be identified as anything. Like I played sport. I played in all the sport at high levels. Obviously, I was studying a lot. So I put those around me, the tiredness, just down to the fact that I had a very, very active, non-stop life. And at university, used to feel quite tired. But again, the university lifestyle, you know, drinking, partying, all of that, I just put it down to the fact that, well, that's just because I'm maybe not living as well as I could do. So, but I had over the years been going for blood tests, always coming back normal, and doctors being like, oh, good news, nothing's wrong. But there was always that feeling of, well, I think there is, I think something is wrong. And I'm sure many people listening will probably relate to the fact that as much as you don't, it sounds strange to say you want a diagnosis, you do, because you know that your body's not quite right. And unless you know what it is, you can't do anything about it. But the GP was quite honest with me and just said, this is what you've got. I can give you antidepressants or I can give you a sick note. That's all I can do for you.
So it's a little bit like out of the frying pan into the fire, right? That it's like you finally, after years of it, as you say, and I think a lot of people will resonate with this. A lot of people, even if there's a kind of tipping point, like you were kind of describing, that you got some kind of bug that was kind of a bit of a final straw that broke the camel's back. There were various, we talk about a boatload analogy where there's different kind of loads on the boat, that you kind of known that something wasn't right. So at least you get the clarity. But it's quite terrifying to get a diagnosis which actually of which the product of which is at really no more clarity. And if anything, I guess, was it then its own source of anxiety that I have this thing, but there's no path? Or was there a sense of at least hope initially?
I think a bit of both. I think it was great to have that diagnosis to think, okay, right, well, now I know what it is. But obviously you're used to going to the doctor and having a clear path of, well, this is what's wrong, this is what we can do. So I did kind of suddenly feel very sort of just left out in the cold, so to speak, because I wasn't depressed. You know, okay, yeah, I would sometimes feel down, but that's because I wasn't well. Like, I knew it wasn't what was causing it. And I didn't just want to be written off sick for however long. So it was, yeah, I think thankfully, like, my parents were really great, and we kind of just thought, right, okay, well, if we can't get any help from the traditional route, what else is out there? And that is when it was a case of, you know, a friend of a friend has done this, or a friend of a friend has done that. And I kind of started the journey of just trying lots of different holistic approaches, which was a completely new territory to me. But I think when you are sick and you don't necessarily have set answers, you will try anything. Like, I became open to anything. So I tried kinesiology because someone had got better from it. I tried bioenergy healing because someone else had recovered from it. I tried Reiki, acupuncture, reflexology, like everything. But one, obviously, it was all very much focused on the physical side of things, because at that point I didn't understand about the psychological impact. And I maybe saw small improvements, but nothing like the recovery stories of other people. And each time it would be a case of, oh, you know, why isn't this working for me? And obviously now, you know, we're all so different that there's nothing wrong with trying things that others have tried, but it's also realizing that your body is your own body, and there's going to be a different puzzle picture and different pieces that need to be addressed with you than someone else, hence why certain treatments don't work, obviously, for everyone.
And I think one of the things that can be quite frustrating is that a lot of practitioners, as well-intentioned and as skillful and as good as they are, they will often see things through a certain lens and through a certain perspective. And so the analogy that I often use, it's a little bit like if you go to a butcher and say, what should I have for dinner tonight? It's like, I don't know what they're going to tell you to have for dinner, but I know it's going to have meat in it. And if you go to a fishmonger's, it's going to have fish in it. If you go to the kind of vegan store, it's probably not going to have meat and fish. So there's a kind of, people see things through the lens through which they see things. And the difficulty is, a lot of practitioners, they don't see a jigsaw. They see a piece of the jigsaw, and they do the best they can to fit people into that piece of the jigsaw.
Yeah, absolutely. And every person I was going to, as much as they felt and they believed that, yes, I can work with chronic fatigue, I can help you, it was through that very narrow lens. And it kind of meant that I yo-yoed for quite a few years. I was never someone that was bedbound for years on end. I had more periods where it'd be a month or two, then I'd pick back up. And I was kind of caught in this cycle, really, of I'd pick back up, but that wasn't 100%, but it was functional enough to get back into life, keep working, and really sort of, I guess, pushing through. because at the time I didn't really know what else to do. It was just a case of, okay, well, this hasn't worked. I don't think I really thought about just stopping work completely. My career was important to me, and I just kind of tried to keep getting back on the wheel, and then I'd keep getting thrown off, and it was this vicious sort of cycle until, again, crashing quite badly in 2013.
I think you, and before that happened, you did the lightning process, I think, right?
Oh, so yes.
Some,
yeah.
So yeah, you did some, and just to people listening that are not aware, I'll just give a 30 seconds kind of context on it. So the lightning process being a way of seeing chronic fatigue, ME, as what we would call a maladaptive stress response or an overstimulated nervous system, but quite restricted in its perspective and its view, and very much of a, you need to stop doing these thoughts and then you will be well and get better. And that causes quite a lot of problems for people sometimes, and it can cause an extension of achiever patterns and deepening of problems, and it can help some people. It's just an example of taking a quite narrow perspective towards it. But for you, I think it did help when you did that at that point, right?
Yeah, no, thank you for reminding me about that key piece. So I'd been very reluctant to do the psychology side or look at anything. And the lightning process had been suggested to me a couple of years before I did it. But, you know, chronic fatigue, ME, there's a lot of stuff around it being psychological. People had said to me, I'll just be more positive. So I was worried about going down that route and it making me feel better. And then everyone thinking it's all in my head. But eventually I thought, right, okay, I need to try everything. And it did work. Like, I did feel an improvement, and it did make me well, when I say well, I guess well enough to kind of feel like, okay, great, I'm better now. But unfortunately, the way that I was taught the lightning process was, yes, it was on thoughts, but it was kind of more focused around thoughts of if you didn't feel energized, like what could you be saying to yourself to feel energized and things like that. And although it worked short term, it didn't teach me about any of the patterns and the behaviors that I was playing out. So I obviously felt a lot better, but went back into life and was just recreating the same stuff and living in the same way that I had done before getting ill. So it was a steady decline. And definitely, I think, because I had got to that point where I thought, yes, this has worked, I feel better, I probably ignored the signals because I didn't want to accept that my body was going downhill again. I didn't want it to have not worked. Hence why eventually I had that kind of big crash again in 2013.
And I think it was around that time that you came across Optimum Health Clinic, is that right?
Yes, it was. So it's actually my mum that found the Optimum Health Clinic. And I remember quite vividly, it was in the summer of 2013, and she sent the information through to me. And I remember looking at it with my boyfriend, who's my now husband. And we were just reading it and we were like, God, for the first time, it all made sense. Like, I think a big thing for me before coming across the Optimum Health Clinic was I didn't really understand what was going on. I knew I was sick. I knew there was stuff that you could do. I knew my body wasn't working. And I used to say, I wish I could just kind of step inside my body and see what's happening, because it didn't make sense. And so for the first time, I saw my boatloads that you were talking about before. And I saw the fact that I had been running a huge out of balance achiever pattern, always pushing, always driving. Like, I identified very strongly with my career and wanting to succeed and do well. I was a huge helper out of balance, to the point of when I was sick and I lived in London, I used to drive up home late, be feeling poorly, but it would be a case of, oh, I'll come and visit you tomorrow, because I didn't want to put people out, asking them to come to me and always worrying about what people thought. It was the first time actually I realized I was an anxiety type, because I used to think of anxiety as, well, that's panic attacks. And I'd had some friends that had had anxiety that extreme. So I never even thought about it with myself. But of course, anxiety has different levels. And I was a huge worrier. I worried about a lot of things and also had a lot of health anxiety. But I'd never really, none of that world hadn't been opened up to me before coming to the clinic.
You had a three out of four on psychology subtypes.
Yeah. And obviously, there was definitely little T trauma, because who doesn't have that?
Right.
So I was kind of like, okay, I can see how my boat's got loaded up on that side. And also kind of from the sort of the physiological side, like my digestive issues had plagued me for years. They'd always been a big problem. So I fitted that type. And, you know, I could kind of just, for the first time, sort of see and understand like the maladaptive stress response, understand what was kind of perpetuating the situation and what was keeping me and my body in the state that it was. And like you said, like I could just see different puzzle pieces and jigsaws that had never really been shown to me because no one had looked at the whole picture. Everyone had looked at little elements, and potentially even those elements weren't properly looked at in the right way.
And so you were working the, did you do the 90-day program as a start, or you were doing telephone sessions?
I did the telephone sessions because I'd already done the lightning process. Yeah. We went for telephone. Yeah. So that's kind of how I started. And I also started nutrition alongside. So I was thankfully able to do both because I knew that both were kind of going to be a key factor.
And I know that on the nutrition side, you obviously did the kind of dietary changes, but also I think working on the mitochondrial piece was really important. So maybe say a bit about kind of how that kind of came about and how that unfolded, that piece.
Yeah. So obviously, like you said, we started with the diet and kind of trying to fix my gut, and I was put on a paleo diet and it did help a lot. I mean, I used to think I ate healthily, but then I realized my Special K for breakfast maybe wasn't as healthy as I thought it was. So, you know, that definitely, I felt a bit more energized. I didn't have the kind of sugar crashes mid-afternoon and the dips. I didn't need to kind of snack as much because I think what I was eating was sustaining my energy better. And we did some other testing. So we looked at my adrenals to see if that was a possibility, just to kind of rule it out, and they were actually okay. So I very much had the kind of relaxing fatigue, so, and that delayed fatigue. I think that's why when in previous years, doctors sort of suggested, well, just exercise more, that might help. And I would, but then a few days later, I would crash. So I was very much caught in that cycle. And I think, so obviously, you know, the mitochondria is a big piece that we look at the clinic because, you know, this delayed fatigue, and obviously if your energy systems in your body aren't functioning right, then you're only going to get so much better with diet and on the psychology stuff. So yeah, we looked at it and it highlighted that basically none of it was working properly. So I had a blockage, my ATP wasn't being released properly and it wasn't being renewed and recycled, which is why I would kind of crash for a few days or a week and then obviously pick back up. And that was definitely I'd already calmed my system quite a bit through using the psychology tools and working on patterns. Obviously the diet had helped. And then working on my mitochondria, it took a few months. I would say it was sort of over 8 or 9 months gradually. And obviously retesting and checking, I gradually saw improvement and saw that my energy was more sustained. I wasn't crashing as much. And I'd kind of reached that baseline that I could then start to build on. And I think that was quite a key turning point for my kind of part of the clinic. And after sort of 9 months, everything was in reference range. The blockages had been cleared and my energy system was actually working the way that it should do.
And just for people who want to go a bit deeper into the mitochondria piece, Dr. Sarah Myhill's interview, which is one of the free gifts of the conference, which is also part of the conference, is a great one to kind of go more into the kind of context, both in terms of how we provide kind of raw nutrients to the mitochondria, but also how we would work with dealing with blockages. Her work's in one of the pieces that's really influenced our protocol on that side. So at this point, you've worked with various pieces of the jigsaw. You've been working on the psychology pieces. You'd worked at calming down maladaptive stress response. You'd worked on your digestion, worked on mitochondria. What was the impact of these various pieces, the kind of collective impact?
So I kind of got to a level that I would probably say at the time felt like 85, 90%. So I was kind of functioning, back in life, feeling, you know, yes, there was still some slight puzzle pieces, but feeling dramatically different than the 18 months when I'd come to the clinic, and feeling that kind of energized and ready to be part of life and start to do some exercise and start to get back into work, because I did take some time out to kind of give my body a chance to recover at that point. And I'd obviously been doing the psychology, the practitioner program, alongside my treatment at the clinic, which obviously just furthered my knowledge of supporting myself. So I did feel pretty quite well. And I felt like my system was far more robust and able to kind of cope with life, I suppose.
Yeah, so you'd been through a significant healing journey. You trained to become a practitioner and started, you know, working as a practitioner on the psychology side. I know then that there was a next piece that kind of came in around you had a potential diagnosis of ulcerative colitis, which, well, tell us what happened, then we'll put it in some context.
Yeah, so probably not long after, probably a year or so into my treatment at the OHC, I did go for some tests. I had some symptoms. And it took a bit of time, but eventually I can't exactly what they called it, but it was a form of ulcerative colitis. But if you kind of Google ulcerative colitis, like, my symptoms weren't typical. They weren't kind of your average symptoms. So I always kind of wondered, but at the same time, enough of it fitted. And obviously I had still sometimes my energy would falter, and obviously ulcerative colitis can cause fatigue, it can cause joint pain, which I did sometimes have some of, and obviously digestive issues, which mine were much better, but they were temperamental. And so I continued to work with my nutrition practitioner at the OHC alongside, just to kind of look at, okay, well, how can we get it into remission? Because obviously with ulcerative colitis, they don't talk about a cure, it's more about how can we settle the system into a remission state so that you don't have symptoms. And we tried quite a few things. Like, we tried fish oils. I had a stool test to make sure that there wasn't anything else going on that we weren't aware of. That just came back showing loads of inflammation, which obviously again fitted the picture. But after about a year or so of trying like different combinations and sometimes seeing improvement, but maybe not as much as my practitioner would have expected, because she had worked with other people with ulcerative colitis and got them into remission, we kind of then sort of took a step back and thought, well, is there something else going on that's meaning that this symptom or this issue can't calm down? Like, what else could be happening in your body that's not allowing you to kind of get on top of this kind of puzzle piece, I guess?
And I think this is a really good example of, and people will see from the daily case studies that we're also doing as part of the conference, that often the way that practitioners are working is you're kind of taking it's almost like there's all of these different jigsaw pieces it could be. And there's a kind of process of elimination where either by a kind of experience and protocol or by kind of testing to confirm kind of assumptions around things. And there are some things that appear like they could be really crucial jigsaw pieces that you go a bit deeper and go, actually, that's not. And it's a kind of, it's almost like a jigsaw where the image that you're trying to match on the jigsaw keeps changing. So it's not like it's clear, oh, I need those pieces. I think it's that. Oh, actually, it's not that. And so the ulcerative colitis was a kind of a piece that was kind of explored. And then it was kind of through that and then the reflection on that, that then Lyme came up as being a piece. So just to kind of summarize what we've got to at this point in the story, you've done a lot of work on the psychology side, you've kind of worked on your achiever and your helper and your anxiety and maladaptive stress response. You've done some work on digestion, mitochondrial function, things had improved a lot. So each of those jigsaw pieces had an impact, but as you were saying that there was some kind of lingering joint pain, kind of inflammation type symptoms. How did the Lyme diagnosis come about?
So my practitioner kind of raised it because I did have, so I was bitten by a tick when I was 8 years old. But back then, I mean, my mum and dad, they removed it as safely as they knew how. They took me to the doctor when I got back from holiday, who said, there's no rash, there's no fever, she's fine. And I guess it's kind of forgotten about, especially after then getting the label of ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, which all my symptoms fitted. I never really thought about it again. And I think my practitioner had been becoming more and more exposed to Lyme. And I know it is something that is becoming more mainstream and understood. And I think she just said, well, you know, I think it's worth this covering it off. Like, it might not be, but because you've got, you know, you've had a tick bite, maybe that is something that's kind of there and it's causing a lot of this inflammation in the body. So I had an NHS test, which came back negative, which isn't a surprise because the testing isn't really that accurate. And I think my immune system, which actually is quite surprising because I was functioning fairly well considering my immune system actually was very compromised. So we had a private test done through Armin Labs in Germany, and that came back and showed Lyme. And we also tested for some co-infections because very rarely is it just Lyme. So all of that kind of showed up, and initially it was a bit of a shock and it did kind of hit hard because obviously I'd, you know, been working really hard and got so far, and I sort of felt like, oh, now I've got something else. It was my husband actually that kind of reflected back to me. He said, but it's not something else. This has always been part of the picture. This has always been a puzzle piece. You just only just uncovering it. And actually he was right. And I think for people listening, you know, sometimes it can, well, you think how many puzzle pieces are there, but it is all part, like you were saying, you sometimes go down one route and you think it's a puzzle piece, but actually it isn't. But by going down that route, it allows you to then actually think, okay, if this isn't it, then okay, it might be this, maybe this is the way we've got to go. And sometimes you do have to look under a few sort of rocks to actually see what's there. And so that kind of reframed it quite well for me. And I thought, actually, yeah, it's not something new. I haven't just got it. It was there. And it's just that we've uncovered that final, probably missing piece that we hadn't been aware of before.
And it's kind of a miracle how well you were given about this was part of the jigsaw that hadn't been addressed. So I know that initially you started going down the kind of antimicrobial kind of path, but that wasn't so tolerated for you. So say a bit about that.
Yeah, so I started working on doing the herbals with my practitioner, and you know, herbals are very powerful. So there was definitely hurting, and I did shift some things, but when we retested, everything just seemed to be getting a lot worse. And we wondered whether there might be some other things, other co-infections going on as well. Because initially we had focused, a viral co-infection had come up kind of even more high than the Lyme. So some of our focus had been there. But I think, again, that was a bit of a red herring, because actually as we started to do more work, we uncovered more of the Lyme, and in testing again, those things had kind of shot up. And I think it was about 8 or 9 months, and I wasn't progressing the way you would probably expect. So it was then a case of looking at, well, maybe this isn't the right route for me. And again, I think that's the key thing, that you have to listen to your body, because there's no one treatment for anything. And it, sometimes if you're trying something and it's not working, like, it's okay to kind of say, right, actually this maybe doesn't suit my body, but there's probably something else that does and will do.
And it's at that point, and I should also put some more context here, that at Optimum Health Clinic, we have a team of nutritional therapists using a functional medicine approach, and we have a team of psychology practitioners. And what we don't do as part of the core nutrition team is use medical drugs such as antibiotics. And obviously antibiotics are part of the picture in certain Lyme protocols. So I know that you then went and did some work with a clinic in the US working with antibiotics. So say a bit about, was that a stretch in your own kind of, like, having been on a very kind of natural kind of path to then go, right, I'm going to use a more medical intervention? Or did you feel quite open to that at the start of that process?
No, I was very resistant to it, because I think I had dealt with, I'd always been brought up, like, my mum would never give us antibiotics unless we really needed it. And I think we were brought up at a time where antibiotics were kind of given for everything. So I was very aware that I didn't really want to take medications if I didn't have to. Obviously I have digestive issues, and of course antibiotics aren't friendly on the gut. So I was worried about that. And you know, I think the holistic approach, it's nice, it supports your body. But then I had to kind of, I guess my family and through talking to them, came to the realization that this might be the option that actually is what's going to get me well. And sometimes I think you have to maybe step out of your comfort zone a bit and try something, because if it's a difference between staying where you are or getting well, I was like, okay, actually, yeah, I think I do need to give this a shot and see what happens. And thankfully, the clinic in America where I'm working, like, it is a very antibiotic heavy protocol. They do use herbals to treat some of the co-infections, but they also obviously support the gut as much as they can with the probiotics, the saccharomyces, and obviously also incorporate supplements alongside, and diet, you know, lifestyle, sleep, having community support. So there was definite kind of crossovers with what I'd learned and the way that the Optimum Health Clinic work, which suited me, I guess, better, made me feel more comfortable. But I definitely think for me personally that all the work I did at the Optimum Health Clinic meant that my body was in a good place to be able to deal with the antibiotics. If I hadn't fixed my mitochondria, I don't think my body would have withstood it as well. And we fixed a lot of nutrition deficiencies, and obviously the psychology side. I still brought all those tools along with me on my Lyme recovery, because it's a different chronic illness, but if your body's not in a healing state, antibiotics can only do so much. Like, they're not a magic pill. And yes, they target the infection, but your body also needs to be in that state to heal and heal damage and everything. So they were kind of a really crucial part, and I was so pleased I had them, because I could support myself emotionally and kind of keep my body in a healing state, which some other people that have gone on a Lyme journey haven't known that, and it's been a lot harder.
And I know that chapter has been challenging in some ways, even with all of those tools and resources. But say a bit about the impact of that, because in a sense, it's like you'd got to a certain level, but you had these lingering symptoms. It's like you almost had to go back into the kind of the reactions and the kind of going through that treatment protocol, which can be tough. But say a bit about what's then been happening as you've been coming through that.
Yeah, so as you said, yeah, it was definitely tough physically and mentally, because you suddenly feel like you're going back a stage. And I think certainly with my Lyme treatment, and I think a lot of Lyme treatment, there is that sense of you have to get a bit worse to get better. You kind of have to, you know, really pull yourself back to catapult forward. And just what I've noticed throughout is kind of the way my doctor worked is in different sort of stages. You know, he didn't go fully on every infection straight away. And now, like, coming out the other side, like, a lot of my symptoms have resolved. So my joint pain isn't really there. My cognitive function is much better. My digestive issues have cleared. So what was ulcerative colitis, actually, I don't believe was. I think it was just my body was so inflamed because of all the infectious load that I was carrying, because none of those symptoms are there anymore. And it's, you know, definitely, it was kind of, it got a bit worse at the beginning of treatment, because obviously everything did, and then it settled. And that has been the case for, I would say, 8 or 9 months. And yeah, I guess it's now more about the infection load's been cleared. And then there's that kind of, I think for anyone with that's gone through kind of treatment or chronic illness, you're then looking at, okay, well, how can I really support my body for that optimum health and supporting the healing to continue? Because once the infections have cleared, there is still that element of, well, depending on how long you've had the disease, you know, what kind of damage that just needs to slowly be repaired over time, which doesn't impact your life, but it just means that you gradually keep getting better and better at the other side, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think it's, I mean, without wanting to sound corny, that was why we called the Optimum Health Clinic the Optimum Health Clinic, and this idea that it's a kind of, it's not just trying to survive and live with something, it's also, it's creating the optimum, and that's an ongoing process for someone that's never had a chronic illness, let alone someone that's been, whose body's been through, you know, that many years of kind of challenge and struggle. I'm curious, as we start to kind of come to the end, in terms of, I mean, you've had a journey that's had a lot of pieces to that jigsaw. And And given also your experience working with a lot of patients as a psychology practitioner as well, I guess I'm curious as to what do you think either helped you or in hindsight would have been helpful if you'd known it at certain times, helped you with that navigating of finding these different jigsaw pieces? Because it could be quite an emotional roller coaster. It can be quite, you have to have a certain resilience or cultivate a certain resilience, I think, to be able to go on those ups and downs and those challenges. What do you think helped you or would have helped you if you'd known it at various times?
So I think a big thing that's helped me, as you say, it's very challenging. It's a roller coaster. I don't think anyone can recover from any kind of chronic illness in a straight line. And the huge thing for me was the support of family. So my parents and my husband have been invaluable. And I think for people listening, like, it is really important. Even if it's just one person, having people there that understand as much as they can do. You know, chronic illness is quite complex and it's difficult for people to fully get it, especially when you maybe one day feel okay and the next day not as good. So having people around you that can kind of let you have your down moments, but then they bring you up and don't force you to kind of constantly be positive all the time. Because I think, you know, the reality is it's a hard thing to do and you need to let those emotions out. You need to honor them. And then obviously you can move through and pick yourself back up. I think for me, definitely, I couldn't have done it alone. You know, there's obviously lots of information out there on different treatments and, you know, detoxing and diets. But there's a lot of conflicting information and it can be very overwhelming and stressful if you try and do it on your own. So for me personally, coming to the clinic and having that guidance and having people in the know, yes, there's things you can then implement yourself, but I think you need to have that steer, because otherwise I think you can be kind of stabbing in the dark, like looking for a needle in a haystack, and it can take a lot longer because as much as you are in your body, you don't necessarily know all the way it functions, or, you know, you can't know everything. And I think reaching out and having that practitioner support for me was invaluable, but also being your own advocate. I think as much as people around you obviously have their expertise, you are in your body and you know. So I think it's trusting your gut instinct. So when my Lyme test first came back, my Lyme levels were kind of a bit of a weak positive. But as I'd looked into Lyme, I just knew, I was like, this is my missing piece. This is what is going on. And so I very much was then like, I am going to uncover this and go on that angle. So I think, you know, tests can show stuff, but you also know your own body. And I think it's having the confidence to kind of speak up and be an advocate as well, because I think the practitioner relationship's a two-way thing. You have to kind of work together. I don't know if that answers
your question. It does. No, it absolutely does answer. And I think that's right. And I think it in a sense, it's such an interesting balance between having support and being guided whilst also trusting your own wisdom, right? And I think that's something that we learn through mistakes, that sometimes we listen too much to others, sometimes we don't listen enough, and we have to kind of find our own compass and I think find our own kind of wisdom with that. And that is part of the journey, right? And I know that obviously that you working as a psychology practitioner now see people kind of find, you know, becoming captain of the ship of their own recovery, as we talk about it. But you can be too much the captain and not allow the crew to also do their work, in a sense. And final question, Sam, what's life like now on the it's kind of having come through and coming through the kind of final stages of this whole kind of journey with these different kind of facets. What's it meant to your relationship with your husband and family and kind of your focus and the things that are important to you in life now?
Well, that's a good question. So I think I definitely appreciate life in a way that might sound really corny, but it's true. Like, I think when you come through and go through a chronic illness, I think the simple things in life mean a lot more. Even just going out for dinner with my husband is something I don't take for granted, because there was a time when I couldn't do that. But I think for me, it's very much about kind of looking to the future and just enjoying life. And kind of, I think I used to look at, oh, I'm always going to have to be careful about my body and my health. And, but actually now I look at it as, well, yes, I still want to do my detoxing. Yes, I still want to eat well. Yes, I still want to manage my stress. But that's because I want a good balanced life and I want my body to work as well as it could. And actually, I don't see it as I'm doing that because I'm sick or someone who had a chronic illness. I think everyone should be doing it because I don't think anyone out there is really living in the most balanced or optimal way. So for me, it's kind of just, yeah, I think enjoying the simple things and enjoying being able to make plans and get excited about the future because I have a body that I can take along with me now.
That's awesome. Sam, thank you so much. And thank you for being so kind of willing to share so honestly of your story. I really appreciate it.
I know, you're welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.